They sat. She hooked her coat over the back of her chair.
I was very surprised to hear from you, Sean.
I guess I surprised myself, Dana. She leaned forward, eyeing him closely.
Let me guess, you want some of the alimony back?
He managed to chuckle. Little late for that. Statute of limitations has expired.
Lucky me.
Plus, what grounds would I have?
Don't look to me to tell you.
She ran her eye over him.
You've kept yourself in shape.
So have you.
You like the new hair color? Blonde never seems to go out of style, so I made the switch permanently.
Very becoming.
Very understated compliment, thanks.
How is the general?
Piling up the air miles and working longer hours than I would like.
Nature of the beast. You want a drink?
Your memory is failing if you even have to ask.
Sean motioned for the waitress who came and took their drink orders. Sean ordered a Bombay Sapphire and tonic. Dana, Johnny Walker Black, solo on the rocks. That'll put hair on your chest, said Sean after the waitress left.
Would you like to see for yourself?
He sat back. Ever the flirt.
Nothing wrong with that. It brings me joy.
But you go home to the general every night, of course.
I would, except he's not there most nights. The military is like bigamy on a massive scale. Curtis is married to me and the DOD.
So why did you marry him?
Because he comes from a prominent family and has a trust fund that helps support us. We live in a beautiful home, complete with a housekeeper. I drive an SL-550 Roadster. I travel where I want, when I want. We're invited to great parties, and I get to meet the most interesting and influential people. And he loves me.
I note that you put the love part at the end.
I like to prioritize.
I can see that.
So what have you been doing with yourself? Still a private detective with what's her name?
Her name would be Michelle Maxwell.
Right. I read about some case you were involved in recently. She almost got killed, didn't she?
She's very much alive and fully healed.
What a relief,
she said casually. Sean grit his teeth and said nothing. When their drinks came, he took a sip of his. She took a longer pull of hers. I thought you would go for the gold label. It's even more expensive, he said. She put her glass down and licked her lips.
At a base level, I'm a simple girl. I have my desires, and not all of them are expensive. In fact, some of the best are free.
Nothing is really free.
Well, you found that out, didn't you?
That I did. You screwed around on me and ended up with half my money and alimony for more years than I care to count. Doesn't seem fair, does it?
The fact is, we never should have divorced, Sean. You were just overly sensitive.
His features darkened. About your sleeping with other men while I was out of town working? I wouldn't call it overly sensitive. I just call it appropriately pissed.
You were gone. I was bored. What exactly did you expect? You know my sex drive has always been insatiable. It's math. One and one gets you to two. Anything less than that just doesn't work.
An older man at the table next to theirs, who had been lasciviously eyeing Dana, nearly choked on a mouthful of pork. Did you ever consider getting a pet? Asked Sean.
No, and for the record, I don't have a pet now.
So what the general doesn't know won't hurt him. She shrugged, took a sip of her drink, and said,
Can we get down to why you called?
I need a favor. She looked suitably surprised.
Then your foreplay was quite underwhelming. Care to try again?
He leaned forward. I've got a client, a very young client, who just lost his dad in Afghanistan.
I assume the father was military?
Yes.
So you really want the favor from Curtis, not me?
In a roundabout way, yes.
What do you mean, roundabout?
Sean took another drink of his gin and tonic. It's sensitive.
I thought these things were pretty straightforward. Soldiers die, the army notifies the next of kin. They go to Dover to see the flag-draped coffins, and then they bury the dead at Arlington, if that's their wish.
Very clinical of you.
In all the time I've been married to Curtis, we've been at war. I've seen this film play out a lot. I hate it that we're losing young men and women over there every damn day. It has aged Curtis like you wouldn't believe. Years ago, while we were dating and he didn't have a single star on his shoulder, he was a field commander over there. He was in combat. He was badly wounded. He very nearly came home in a coffin. I sat next to his hospital bed at Walter Reed for over a month, wondering if he was going to make it.
I'm sorry, I didn't know that.
I may not be the perfect wife, but I do care about him. We have a good life together.
She looked away.
And the fact is, I haven't... Well...
She paused and glanced down for a moment before staring directly at him.
The fact is, I've been completely faithful to Curtis. I just wait at home like a good wife until he comes back, whenever that might be. And even though he's technically stationed at the Pentagon, he goes to the Middle East on a regular basis. And I wait here holding my breath and praying he gets back in one piece. I'm not sure why I go for the guys who carry guns and get shot at.
Sean gave her a puzzled look. Then why are you all dressed up like you're going to walk down a Victoria's Secret runway? And why all the insatiable talk? She pursed her lips.
Because I haven't seen you in a long time, and I thought it was the act you wanted to see.
How could you possibly think that, Dana?
Because I know you would never believe that I've changed, so why should I even bother trying to convince you? The old Dana was just easier and not nearly as soul-searching. And today has been a long day, and I guess I just couldn't muster the energy.
As crazy as that sounds, it actually makes sense.
Oh, goody.
She pulled her coat on, covering her chest.
I'm freezing. I should have worn a sweater, and these stilettos are killing my feet.
She kicked them off and rubbed one foot against the other.
And these stockings look a lot better than they feel. It's like being a tuna caught in a net.
He smiled. Why do I feel like I'm talking to an entirely different person?
Do you not realize that I know how much I hurt you?
I guess I never thought about it. Your actions spoke quite loudly.
I was selfish and stupid. We could have had kids.
We could have had lots of things, Dana.
I'm too old for that now.
You're not that old. Women your age have kids all the time.
Curtis is set in his ways, and I'm not sure I have the energy to run after toddlers, Sean.
We all make choices. She finished her drink.
Can we order some food? And then we can talk more about your kid who needs my roundabout help.
Later, when their plates were cleared and the coffees had been brought, Dana said,
Okay, talk to me.
His name is Tyler Wingo. Sean went on to tell her most, but not all, of what had transpired. He was about to add something else when his phone buzzed. He looked down at the text he had just gotten from Michelle. In it, she had recounted what Tyler had told her on the drive home about his father. Dana watched his face and said,
Developments?
Could be. Now they're telling him that his father was first shot and then hit by a mortar. There are no remains left to bring home.
They always bring the remains home, Sean. Trust me on that. If a mortar shell did hit him, the coffin will be closed and sealed. But the Army is really good about identifying the dead. I know from Curtis that the Pentagon is borderline fanatical about that.
I'm sure they are. It's just curious they didn't tell him the first time.
It could be as simple as they didn't want to tell the son or the wife something that disturbing when they were already delivering such devastating news. They have protocols for this, but each situation is different. You said Tyler was running through the rain with his father's old collectible gun. It could be the Army reps deemed it unwise to tell him about the condition of his father's body at that time, since he was so clearly upset. They wouldn't have wanted to risk traumatizing him and his mother further.
Stepmother, he corrected. But that does make sense. So why the stone wall at the Pentagon?
Confidentiality. They take it seriously there, particularly about combat deaths.
Tyler seemed like he was holding something back, though. Something that only he knew but didn't want to tell.
Something about his father.
From Michelle's text, Sean knew exactly what he had been holding back. His father had sent him a message after he was supposedly killed. He debated whether to tell Dana this. but then decided against it. She was married to a general, after all, and owed him far more allegiance than she owed Sean. I don't know. Michelle seemed to think so, and she has good instincts. Dana drank her coffee and appraised him keenly.
So are you two a couple as well as business partners?
What's it to you?
I'll take that as a yes. I've seen her picture, read up on her. Quite a beauty. Quite an overachiever. I mean, an Olympian who can shoot straight. What a combination.
Why did you read up on her? And before it seemed you could barely remember her name.
Just a game we girls play. I'm sure she's a ball of fire between the sheets.
Now there's the Dana I know.
I never said I had changed completely. What exactly do you want me to do about Tyler Wingo?
I would appreciate whatever you could find out.
I'm not a spy. I do some work with wounded soldiers and their families, and I'm involved in many of the organizations that generals' spouses typically are. But I don't have the security clearances or computer skills to get into the Pentagon's inner rings or hack into databases.
Don't underestimate your skills, Dana.
What do you mean?
Sean ran his eye over her. I was thinking more along the lines of pillow talk. She smiled.
Okay, now that I can do. Curtis is a stickler for protocols, but any man can be manipulated, given the right inducements.
He smiled, like riding a bike. His expression quickly turned serious. But let's be clear. Just try to work it into a conversation with the general and see what comes of it. I don't want you to go out on a limb or take unnecessary chances. That would not be good.
You're making this seem dangerous.
It potentially is very dangerous. She stared across the table at him.
You're giving me your steely Secret Service stare.
Surprised you remember what it looks like after all these years.
There were many things that were unforgettable about you, Sean. That just happens to be one of them.
If you do decide to help us, and anything weird happens, you call me. He slid his card across to her.
Okay, you're officially scaring me,
she said in a mirthful tone, although her troubled look clearly said otherwise. Good, said Sean. Chapter 15. Michelle dropped Tyler off about 3 blocks from his house. She watched him walk away and then slowly followed him to make sure he arrived safely. She didn't see any Pentagon cars lurking like feral cats in an alley, ready to pounce on unsuspecting prey. But that didn't mean they weren't there. She drove off with one thought nagging her. Tyler had refused to tell her what his father had written him in the email. She had asked nicely, and then less politely when her frustration got the better of her. Yet the more she tried, the more Tyler had dug his heels in. They had not parted on the best of terms. She had promised him she would keep digging. He had been largely unresponsive to her on this point. He had walked away, head down, feet shuffling, looking very much like a young man who had lost everything of value in his life. She was annoyed and empathetic at the same time, and the disparate emotions were making her feel a bit dizzy. She had texted Sean all of this information and wondered how his meeting with Dana was going. It had surprised her at first when Sean had started talking about his ex-wife. Michelle learned shortly after the two of them met that Sean had once been married. Yet Dana's name had never once come up since then. It was as if she had disappeared from the earth, and it was a little jolting to discover that this was not the case, and that Sean would be meeting with her. She wasn't feeling jealousy, really, just apprehension. Yet maybe at some level they were the same thing. She also wondered if Dana would actually consent to use her husband's status in the military to help the man who had divorced her. As she was driving back to her apartment, her phone buzzed. It was Sean. She arranged to meet him at their office.
How did it go with Dana?
She asked. Not what I expected, he replied. Michelle put the phone away, not quite knowing how to take that statement. The offices of King and Maxwell were on the second floor of an unremarkable low-rise building in Fairfax. The views were limited, the building not overly clean, but the rent was cheap, or as cheap as it got around here. He was already waiting for her when she opened the door and came in. They only had the one large room. The benefit of his secretary was not in their budget. Nor was it necessary, Michelle felt. They did quite well on their own. Adding a third person to the mix might destroy that delicate balance. She sat across from him at her still messy desk. He was seated at his chair, his feet up on his desk.
"So how was it unexpected?"
she asked, looking at him pointedly. He stopped staring at the ceiling and focused on her. "I felt like a priest, witnessing a confession."
"A catharsis for the soul by your ex?"
"I think she really loves her husband."
"That's refreshing. Will she help us?"
"Yes, but I told her to be careful."
"Does she know about the email?"
"I didn't think that would be productive. I told her about the mortar shell part. She had a reasonable explanation for why they wouldn't have told the family about that the first night."
"What do you really think she can do?"
"I have no idea. I don't know what we can do, actually." He lifted his feet off the desk and sat up in his chair. "So, he wouldn't tell you what the email said?"
"No. And believe me, I tried, maybe too hard in retrospect."
"Do you believe him?" Michelle looked surprised.
"Why would he lie about something like that?"
"I'm just mentioning it as a possibility. Since we don't have independent verification of it, I can't really treat it as fact yet."
"Yes, I believe him."
Sean nodded absently. "We really need to see that email. It could tell us lots of things."
"You'd think the army would be monitoring things like that. Emails from soldiers in the battlefield coming back. They have to be under surveillance."
"No, they don't. At least not typically. You can use your government email or even a Gmail account to send and receive messages."
"Even so, maybe Wingo was treated differently?"
"I don't know. But maybe Sam Wingo figured out a way around that and got a message to his son that only he knows about."
"Or maybe there was a technical snafu somehow. Maybe the email got delayed and it was sent before Sam was killed, but Tyler only received it afterward."
"Did the email have a timestamp showing when it was sent?"
"I suppose it did. I didn't actually see it."
"Right. But someone else with access to Wingo's computer could have sent it from his father's email account after Wingo officially died."
"I asked Tyler about that. He was adamant that only his dad could have sent it."
"Based on what?"
"He wouldn't say. And why would someone write such an email in the first place, making it seem like it was from Sam Wingo? Pretty cruel trick to play on a kid."
"We really need to know why Tyler believes his dad wrote it."
"Sean, he flat out refused to tell me."
"It's tough having an uncooperative client."
"Do we ever get any other kind? Our last one initially refused to talk to us at all."
"Edgar Roy. That's right, he did." Sean swiveled around in his chair and then swung it back around to face her. "I wonder if Edgar could get access to that email."
"How?"
"Do we have Tyler's email address?"
"I can get it from his friend Kathy. I don't think kids email much anymore, or use Facebook. They don't talk on the phone either. They text or Tumblr or whatever the hell else they do."
"You sound really old," Sean pointed out.
"Compared with that age, I'm ancient. I'm Maggie Smith in Downton Abbey, wondering where the horse and carriage is when the Model T drives up."
"So get the email from Kathy and we'll give it to Edgar. If he can sit in front of this huge wall of screens with data flowing in from around the world to make sense of it, I think he can probably hack a teenager's email."
"So how did you leave it with Dana?"
"She would see what she could find out. I told her to be careful. It might be dangerous." Michelle straightened out a paper clip on her desk. Without looking up, she said,
"So how was it seeing your ex after all this time?"
"I felt lucky." She glanced up, frowning.
"Lucky?"
"Yeah. Lucky that I escaped with my sanity and manhood intact."
"Think you'll ever take the plunge again?"
"I don't know. You've never taken it."
"I'm a lot younger than you,"
she said, smiling. "Yes, you are."
"But we've both been aged by life's events,"
she added, her smile fading. He leaned forward, resting his elbows on his desktop. Yes, we have. Regrets?
Wouldn't have missed a minute of it. Well, maybe the minutes that hurt like a bitch.
I wonder if Jean Wingo knows about the email, asked Sean.
If I had to guess, I would guess not. They don't seem to be two people who share much of anything except a house. But if Sam Wingo is alive, why is the army saying he was shot and killed?
And then mortared, which gets them around the pesky detail of remains that can be identified by family members.
I was thinking the same thing, actually.
So again, why? Because the army has to be in on the subterfuge. They would certainly know if the man was alive or dead, as would members of his unit.
Pity we can't get to them and ask them.
I guess it would behoove us to find out when his unit's coming back stateside.
Do you think Dana could wheedle that out of our hubby?
Sean nodded. Soldiers are made of strong stuff, but Dana has a way of making men talk.
Really?
Said Michelle, but her features were clearly annoyed. Sean didn't see this warning sign. He gazed at the ceiling, a smile playing off his lips. She came into the restaurant, dressed in a miniskirt, fishnets, and stilettos, with her cleavage spilling out, and this really hip blonde hairdo. I have to admit, she looked great. I thought every guy in the restaurant was going to fall out of his chair. One old guy almost choked when she talked about being sexually insatiable.
Every guy?
Said Michelle, a definite hard edge to her words. Sean looked at her, suddenly taken aback. No. Of course not every guy.
Sexually insatiable? How the hell did that come up in the conversation?
Sean sputtered. We were just talking about what went wrong between us, and I... Michelle rose.
I'm beat. I'm going to bed. See you in the morning.
She headed for the door. Michelle, you're being silly, he called after her.
Great, Sean. Just what a woman wants to hear.
She slammed the door behind her. Chapter 16. When Michelle came out of her apartment the next morning, it was early, the sun barely up. Yet there he was. Sean was standing next to his Lexus, two cups of coffee in hand. He was shivering with the chill in the air.
Why are you here?
To beg forgiveness for being a total ass last night. He held up the coffee. It's not much, but it is hot. I timed your appearance just right. You are definitely not one to linger in bed. She stared at him for a few uncomfortable seconds, then walked over and snagged the styrofoam cup. I am sorry, he said quietly.
You have nothing to be sorry about. We're business partners. What you fantasize about in your spare time is entirely up to you.
I don't fantasize about her. Don't forget, I only looked her up because you asked me to. Michelle's anger faded with this statement. She took a drink of her coffee and just stared at the pavement. Look, Michelle, Dana is happily married. I know it sounds incredible, but she really cares for her general. And she went on and on about him.
And you?
I'm really happy she loves the general. They eyed each other.
I guess I get that,
said Michelle. Trust me, my years with Dana were some of the worst of my life. I do not have enough time left to go back down that road, even if I wanted to, which I don't. Michelle sipped her coffee.
Okay, what now? We're waiting on Dana and Kathy. We really can't approach Tyler at this point.
Michelle's phone dinged. She looked at the screen and then held it up for Sean to see.
We just got Tyler's email address from Kathy.
Then our next stop is Edgar Roy.
At his farm?
No, I checked. He's working in D.C. the rest of this week.
Bunting Enterprises?
Satellite office thereof.
Can we see him there? Isn't it classified and firewalled with attack dogs ready to eat trespassers?
I'm sure it is. But we can call and arrange to meet with him outside the Emerald City. I'll tell him to bring his laptop and his big brain. Sean started to get in on the driver's side of his Lexus. Michelle said,
I'll drive.
But Sean started to protest. Michelle was already climbing into her truck, however. Sean opened the passenger door to the Land Cruiser and a pile of junk fell out onto the pavement. He jumped when a half-empty carton of orange juice spilled on his shoes.
Just throw it in the back seat,
advised Michelle. How about I just put it all in that trash can over there, he said angrily.
But it's not all trash.
If it looks like trash and smells like trash.
In the back seat, Sean. Thanks.
Sean glared for a moment at the pile of stuff and then proceeded to hurl it into the back seat with velocity. Finished, he slammed the door shut.
Feel better?
She asked. No, not really, he said between gritted teeth as he stared straight ahead. I have orange juice in my socks.
Then your feet will never get a cold.
Sean called Edgar on the drive over. He did not keep normal hours and had been at work for some time already. When they reached the office building, a block over from K Street, they both saw him at the same time. Edgar Roy was hard to miss. He was 6'9", which was extremely tall on any surface other than an NBA court. He was also exceedingly thin, which made him seem even taller. He was carrying a laptop computer under one arm. They pulled to the curb, and Sean rolled down the window. Hey, Edgar! Edgar glanced over at him. Partially obscured behind the thick glasses was a pair of eyes that fronted one of the premier minds in the country, if not the world. Edgar Roy was America's most invaluable intelligence analyst. The amount of material his mind was able to burrow through to find small nuggets of intelligence gold was truly unprecedented. Yet right now, all Sean was hoping was that he could hack a teenage boy's email. Sean and Michelle hopped out of the truck and approached. Both tall, they still had to stare nearly straight up to come close to an eyeball-to-eyeball with Edgar. Edgar nodded at both of them and then turned his gaze fully to Michelle. I didn't say this the last time we met, but I'm glad you're doing so well, Ms. Maxwell. Michelle had tried and failed to get him to call her by her first name.
Thanks, Edgar, but I should be doing the thanking. You're the one who saved my life, and we appreciate your taking the time to meet with us. It won't take long.
Sean said, I've got an email account here that I'm hoping you can hack into. We need to see some of the most recent flow. Edgar looked at the email address. Sean knew that he had instantly memorized it. He sat down with his laptop on a nearby bench, opened it, and started hitting keys. You don't have to do it now, Edgar, said Sean. When you get a break from whatever it is you do in there, you can work on it, not sit out here in the cold. And then, here, said Edgar. He had turned the laptop around so that they could see the screen. On it were Tyler Wingo's email postings. How did you do that so fast? Asked an amazed Sean. I'm not sure you would understand, said Edgar politely.
You're right there,
said Michelle. She sat down next to Edgar while Sean perched on the other side of the bench. They ran their eyes down the screen. There weren't many emails. I don't see it, said Sean. He might have deleted it. That means we're SOL. Highly doubtful, said Edgar. There are ways to fry drives. Unless you do, simple deletions mean nothing. Edgar hit some more keys, and a new list of posts appeared. He also deleted it from his trash, but there was another cache it was copied to, so that wasn't so apparent. Easy enough if you know where to look. I'm glad you know where to look, said Sean.
There,
said Michelle, pointing at the third email from the top.
It's from Sam Wingo.
Sean and Michelle read it and then looked at each other. Sean said, I don't see anything in that message that Tyler wouldn't want us or anyone else to know. It's pretty short, and it's just his dad talking about school and Tyler's swimming. Maybe That's why he merely deleted it and didn't truly erase it, suggested Edgar. Did he reply to the email? Asked Sean. Edgar hit some more keys but finally shook his head. No. Michelle said,
Sean, look at the timestamp. It was sent after they told him his father was dead, just like Tyler said.
Sean ran his eye over the message again and an idea occurred to him. It might be in code, Edgar. Think you can help us out? Right. Edgar ran his eye over the message, his pupils flicking back and forth at speed. His lips were moving, but no words were coming out. He opened another screen and typed the letters I-A-S-P-F-M. He said, I ran it through the typical 100 or so initial possibilities. Looks to be an every seventh word initial letter substitution cipher. Low security value point. But it's so old and seldom used that it could have some worth. Useless against a real cyber strike, of course. And any legitimate code breaker would have no trouble with it. But it is a bit more sophisticated since it spells out an acronym and not actual words, meaning it's a double-layer encryption.
But what does the acronym mean?
Asked Michelle. Ordinary web shorthand, said Edgar, sounding surprised. Initial letter-based with straightforward extrapolation intended. I thought you would know.
I missed that class,
said Michelle. Me too, added Sean quickly, along with all math and science courses. It means, I am sorry, please forgive me, said Edgar. Sean and Michelle exchanged a glance. Does that help? Asked Edgar. It certainly doesn't hurt, said Sean. Chapter 17. Sean and Michelle had just returned to their office when the phone rang. It was Peter Bunting, head of a large defense contracting firm and Edgar Roy's employer. And the man was a little upset. Sean actually held the phone away from his ear as Bunting's screams poured out. Who exactly are we talking about, Mr. Bunting? Sean asked when the man stopped to take a breath. Bunting said something and Sean nodded. Okay, we will look into this, and I'm sorry. Bunting yelled something and hung up. Sean turned to Michelle.
What was that all about?
DOD just came and yanked Edgar Roy from his office.
What? Why?
Cause and effect, apparently.
Meaning we were the cause?
Sean nodded. Because of the timing, Bunting can't think of any other reason he would have been snatched, and I tend to agree with him. Edgar told him of our meeting. Bunting's a little mad right now.
I could hear. What did he say right before he hung up?
Something about damaging my testicles, although he used a less polite term. Michelle plopped into her desk chair and glanced at the door.
Should we be prepared for invasion, too?
Edgar Roy is employed by a government contractor and thus technically works for the government. He did us a favor on government time. They may be able to ding him a little for that, but there's no way they'll keep him locked up somewhere. He's too valuable an asset.
Which doesn't really answer my question. We are not that valuable, so they wouldn't have a problem locking us up and throwing away the key.
We're also not employed by the government, and there's the little issue of habeas corpus. That still means something in this country.
Yeah, but we got a government genius to hack a private account for us. Isn't that illegal?
We also have the permission of the account holder to investigate. Tyler did hire us.
And he also fired us,
Michelle reminded him. A technicality only.
So you say.
I am a lawyer.
And lawyers are full of bullshit. In fact, they charge more for that.
If they break our doors down, I think we'll have enough of a defense to escape any real trouble. Michelle feigned a smile.
5 years in prison versus 10. What a relief.
I tend to believe that the email came from Sam Wingo, which means the army is lying its collective ass off. Michelle said,
But what was he sorry for, and why did he want his son's forgiveness?
For lying to him? For getting into this mess and causing Tyler to suffer? Suggested Sean.
Okay, but that leaves us with hunches and not a lot of paths to follow them up.
We have Tyler, we have Kathy, we have Dana, and we have DTI.
Let's go with the low-hanging fruit first.
Dana?
I was thinking Kathy.
You want to split up?
I'll take Dana, you take Kathy.
You're kidding, right?
Am I?
She said, staring at him. Kathy doesn't know me. And it might be a little awkward for me to be meeting a high school girl.
Okay, let's partner up on both, then. I've always wanted to meet your ex.
Always?
Always since yesterday.
She might not know anything yet. It hasn't been very long.
From what you said, she can be very persuasive, particularly with her choice in clothes.
Why don't you text Kathy first? If she's found something out, we can meet her. I'll text Dana.
And DTI?
I'd love to hit those folks, but DOD has to be watching them.
Is there any law against us asking questions? People don't have to answer.
Sometimes people make up their own laws. By the time it's all figured out, we're eligible for Social Security.
It would help if we knew the names of some of Sam Wingo's co-workers there.
Well, from what I could find out, the actual office where Wingo worked isn't that big. Maybe 20 people. I bet they all knew each other, at least somewhat.
Do we wait outside and see who looks promising when they leave work?
Maybe. But that will be after we meet with Kathy, if she has anything. Text her now. Michelle did. 5 minutes went by.
Maybe she cut us off, too.
Said Michelle as she stared at her phone. Give it time. Another minute went by, and then a text popped up on Michelle's phone.
She talked to Tyler. She'll meet us at the same cafe.
You should get a Panera card, advised Sean. Michelle frowned.
This thing is looking stranger by the minute. I don't want to end up back in a CIA cell that no one knows about.
Sean laced his fingers behind his head and leaned back in his chair. Frankly, I'm more worried about Tyler and his stepmom than I am about us. Michelle shot him a glance.
Why?
Tyler got that email. Edgar hacked it and figured it out. Who's to say a third party won't do the same?
So they know the father communicated with the son?
After he supposedly died.
And Tyler knows that because he told me that. Do you think he might tell anyone else?
I sincerely doubt he'll confide anything to his stepmom, Jean.
Kathy said she'd talk to him. Maybe he told her.
I hope they talked without using their phones or computers. Michelle nodded in understanding.
The Pentagon would have all of that locked down. The thing is, kids these days don't seem to actually talk to each other anymore. They just text each other.
Well, for their sakes, I hope they broke that rule this time.
Sean, why would the Army say a soldier is dead if he really isn't?
I guess I can think of a few reasons, but none that make any sense at all.
And Dad wanted his son's forgiveness. For pretending to be dead? For putting him through all that horror?
Maybe. And now Tyler believes that his father is alive.
Part of me hopes he is, because if he isn't, and Tyler finds out the truth?
Sean nodded in understanding. He'll have lost his dad. Twice. Chapter 18.
How is Tyler doing?
Asked Michelle. She and Sean were sitting across from Kathy Burnett at the Panera.
Not that good. He's really moody and doesn't want to talk.
But you said he did talk to you, noted Sean. Kathy fiddled with the paper cover from the straw for her soda.
A little. Face to face?
Asked Michelle.
Meaning not over your phones. No, he drove over to my house earlier today. We talked in my backyard. What did he tell you?
Asked Michelle.
Is Tyler in some sort of trouble?
Kathy blurted out. No, said Sean. Does he think he is?
I know he's worried. Just tell us what he said, and maybe we can make some sense out of it,
advised Michelle.
And you're really wanting to help him, right? He came to us, Kathy,
replied Michelle quite truthfully.
He hired us to look into this for him. Since he's our client, our only interest is what's best for him.
Sean nodded in agreement, and then they both eyed the teenage girl.
He told me there's something weird with his dad's death. Weird how? The army is saying that he's dead, but Tyler thinks there's more to it. Based on what?
Asked Michelle, though she knew the answer.
He wouldn't say, but he did tell me that the army is jerking him around, changing the story on how his dad died. They were supposed to go up to Dover to see his dad's coffin come in, but then they said there was a delay.
Did they tell him for how long? Asked Sean.
If they did, he didn't tell me. He was really upset about that.
Did he mention any emails he might have gotten from anyone? Asked Sean quietly. Kathy shot him a glance.
Emails? From who?
I don't know. I'm just asking, trying to feel out the situation. She looked suspiciously at both of them.
If Tyler hired you, why aren't you asking him these questions?
Sean and Michelle exchanged a glance. Sean said, It's a little complicated, Kathy. Michelle added,
We wanted to get some information from a friend of his, to gauge how he's doing, what he's talking about. We know he's really upset and maybe not thinking too clearly, but what you've said so far is consistent with what Tyler has already told us.
Kathy nodded, apparently satisfied with the explanation.
He did tell me that he doesn't trust the army.
I can understand that, said Sean. How are things with him and his stepmom?
Tyler didn't mention her. He never really talks about her, actually. I know they live in the same house, but that's about it. I don't think there's much interaction at all.
When did his dad go into the Army Reserves?
About a year or so ago.
When Kathy again seemed to be growing suspicious from all the questions, Sean quickly said, How about your mom? How much longer will she be in?
She has 2 more years to go to get her full pension. Then she gets it right away so she can enjoy it before she's, you know, really, really old, like 50.
Sean exchanged a glance with Michelle. Perish the thought she should have to wait until she's that old, said Sean dryly.
Foot in the grave,
added a smiling Michelle. I wonder if Sam Wingo pulled his full 20, said Sean. Kathy said,
I don't think so. Tyler said his dad went into the army after he turned 25. The paper said he was 45 when he was killed. That means he's not old enough to have served 20 years if he left the army a year ago.
Michelle said,
Okay, but then he apparently left the army only 1 year short of a full pension. Why do that after busting your hump for 19 years? Maybe he got a better job that would pay him a lot more money,
said Kathy. Could be, said Sean, who sounded far from convinced.
Have you seen any sign of more money in the Wingo household?
Asked Michelle.
I mean, they haven't moved, right? But what about a new car, computers, renovation to the house? No, nothing like that. And Tyler never mentioned anything. Their house is nice, but it's, you know, like just a regular house.
So if not money, why else would he have left? Wondered Sean. He glanced at Kathy. Did Tyler ever talk to you about what his dad did at work? DTI?
He just said he was in sales. You know, he'd meet with clients and stuff and sell things. DTI specializes in foreign translators for the country of Afghanistan primarily,
said Michelle.
You wouldn't think you'd need a big sales force to push that product.
Kathy shrugged.
My mom says it takes forever to sell stuff to the government because of all the rules and red tape. But when you do sell something, you can make a lot of money. But you have to know people, she told me. Which would make sense to use an army vet to sell things to the army,
said Michelle, looking at Sean. He nodded slowly. Kathy, can you think of anything else that might help us? She started to shake her head no, but then stopped.
Well, Tyler did say one thing. It might not be important, especially since his dad is dead. What?
Asked Michelle.
He and his dad had this code language they used that only the two of them could understand. They'd use it in emails when his dad was deployed.
Michelle asked,
Why would they use a code? The military's not supposed to monitor personal emails, but lots of people think they do. And I think it meant a lot to Tyler that he and his dad had this special code. I did something similar when my mom was over there.
Sean said, Did he tell you what the code was?
No.
Kathy drew a long breath.
I don't understand why all this is happening to him, but I know it's not his fault. No, it's not.
Agreed Michelle. Kathy checked her watch.
I have to get going. My mom is expecting me. Do you need a lift?
Asked Michelle.
No, the bus picks up right outside.
We can take you, said Sean. Kathy looked at him warily, and he added, And you're very smart not to accept rides from people you don't really know. Kathy gave him a shy smile, collected her bag, and started to walk off.
I hope you can help Tyler,
she said.
We will help him,
replied Michelle. After she left, Sean turned to Michelle. He said, Okay, we learned a lot, but not much that was actually helpful.
What's bugging me is why leave the Army 1 year short of getting your full pension? I mean, who does that?
Well, whoever does it has to have an awfully good reason. And with Wingo, it can't be because of disciplinary problems, observed Sean.
Right. He was in the reserves, and they sent him back over there, so it wasn't like he'd screwed up or gotten a bad conduct discharge.
She looked over at the doorway and stiffened.
Okay, this is about to get a little dicey.
Sean looked at the door. Two men in military uniforms were standing there. They spotted Sean and Michelle and started to walk toward them. And both men were armed. Chapter 19. Would you two like some coffee? Asked Sean as the uniform stopped in front of their table. It's cold out there, almost as cold as it's gotten in here. John King and Michelle Maxwell? Asked one of them. The military knows all, said Sean pleasantly. Could you please step outside? Said the same uniform. His stripes and insignia showed him to be a sergeant in the military police.
I think we're just fine right here, actually,
said Michelle. Could you step outside? Said the uniform again. Why? Asked Sean. We need to talk to you, which is something you can do right here. He motioned to two empty seats at the table. We would prefer if this took place outside. Then we have a difference of opinion. But since you're military police and neither of us is in the military, I'm not seeing how you get us outside against our wishes when we are breaking no laws that would allow you to execute a citizen's arrest. You the lawyer? Said the other uniform. You sound like one, he added when Sean nodded. The sergeant laid a hand on top of his sidearm. That would be a career-ending mistake, Sergeant, said Sean. And neither you nor I would want that. Then I guess we do this the harder way.
What way would that be?
Asked Michelle warily. The sergeant slipped his phone out and sent a text. 5 seconds later, the door to Panera burst open, and in walked three men in suits. Sean King and Michelle Maxwell, said the lead man. Who wants to know? Replied Sean. Three Homeland Security badges were shoved in their faces. Let's go, barked the lead agent. As Sean and Michelle were yanked from their seats, the sergeant said with a smile, That's the harder way. The 40-minute ride in an SUV with blacked-out windows landed them at a facility in Loudoun County, Virginia, that was surrounded by large stands of trees. They were hustled through the front doors, taken past security after their weapons were confiscated, and led down a hallway. Sean said for the umpteenth futile time, What the hell is this about? And for the umpteenth time, he received not a single answer. They were taken to a small, bare conference room and told to sit. The door was closed and locked behind them. Sean looked around the space. Michelle said,
DHS? Why are they involved? Isn't the DOD enough of an 800-pound gorilla?
Sean put a finger to his lips and pointed to a small listening device poking out above the molding next to the ceiling. A few minutes later, the door opened and a man entered. He was about Sean's height, around 50. Still trim with thick legs that stretched his pants to near capacity. He wore no jacket. Against his white dress shirt was a shoulder holster with no pistol in it. He was holding a file. He sat across from them and read from the file for so long that Sean was about to say something when the other man looked up. Interesting stuff, said the man. I'm Jeff McKinney, DHS Special Agent Jeff McKinney, to be precise. And I'm an especially pissed-off private citizen, replied Sean.
Make that two,
said Michelle. McKinney sat back. Coffee, water, tea? Answers and apologies would do just fine, answered Sean. With the apologies preferably up front. Apologize for what, doing our job? Sean shook his head. It's not going to cut it, McKinney. I don't think Homeland's job is to jerk law-abiding citizens out of their chairs at a public place without telling them why or reading them their rights. So we've technically been kidnapped. Unless you've added felonies to your official duties, you've got a massive lawsuit coming your way. I'll want to spell your name right. Is it MC or MAC? McKinney smiled and tapped the file. Let's talk Tyler Wengo. Sean leaned forward. Let's talk you letting us the hell out of here. But I haven't asked my questions, McKinney said pleasantly. You can direct them to my lawyer. I'm going to call him right now. You don't need a lawyer. You haven't been arrested. We have been detained against our will. Same thing in my book. But if we haven't been arrested, then you have no power to hold us. He started to rise. National security trumps a lot of what's in the Constitution, Mr. King. So please sit back down. I don't want to resort to restraints, but I will if I have to. You're only digging your hole deeper. I think we both want the same thing, what's good for Tyler Wengo. Sean sat back down while Michelle warily watched both men. Well, if you're working with the Army, I seriously doubt that. What do you have against the Army? They're good people. Sean leaned back in his chair and seemed to make up his mind. Okay, ask you questions. What's your connection with Tyler Wengo? Confidential, unless he's waived it. He's not old enough to be your client. While it's true we couldn't enforce a contract against Tyler because he has not yet reached the age of majority, we accord all clients, regardless of age, the same professional courtesy of maintaining confidentialities. Then this conversation will be very short. What I was hoping for, actually, said Sean. McKinney opened the file, pulled a piece of paper from it, and slid it across to Sean. He looked down at it while Michelle read over his shoulder. As you can see, Tyler Wengo has waived any confidentiality rights he might have. So you can answer my question. What is your relationship with him? Sean pushed the paper away. How much did you have to threaten to get him to sign that? We don't threaten kids, Mr. King. He signed it because he wanted to. Now, what is your relationship? He retained us to investigate his father's death. His father was KIA in Afghanistan. He and his stepmother were duly informed of this. There is nothing you can add to that. It's not like you can fly into Afghanistan and start poking around. It's a war zone and a military zone. And you would have no jurisdiction whatsoever as your PI license does not extend to international domains, I checked. Sean said nothing to this. So were you trying to take advantage of the boy? Did he pay you money? Did you ask for a retainer? We haven't gotten a cent from Tyler. You mean not yet, but you would have billed him, right?
Have you really checked us out?
Asked Michelle.
I'm assuming you have, so you have to know that we're legit. We don't run around like ambulance chasers trying to get money out of grieving teenagers. We found Tyler running down the street in the middle of a storm. He was upset. We took him back home. He contacted me and said he wanted us to look into his father's death. We told him there wasn't much we could do.
And so why didn't it end right there? Interjected McKinney. Because he was insistent. We really didn't want to take the case, said Sean. But at the same time, if he was going to pursue it, I would rather it be people like us than others who might take advantage of him. What more did you possibly think you could learn about his father's death? It occurred in Kandahar in combat, for God's sakes. Michelle said,
On the surface, it seemed like nothing. His father was dead. Small arms fire. Coffin was supposed to arrive at Dover.
She paused and looked at Sean.
But then things started getting a little squirrely.
Squirrelly how? Asked McKinney.
For starters, now the army is telling him that his father was also hit by a mortar shell and there is really nothing left of the body. So no Dover.
So what? Asked McKinney. Combat is not neat and tidy. The man is still dead. He's certainly not the first casualty, nor will he be the last, unfortunately. Right, said Sean. So why is the army and now DHS so interested? You said this was a national security issue. How?
You really think I can answer that?
Well, if it is a national security issue, then you've just as good as told us this situation is different, because most soldiers who get killed in combat are not normally at the epicenter of a DHS matter. You can't have it both ways, Agent McKinney.
On the contrary, I can have it any way I want. What I'm telling you is to back off and stay away from Tyler Wingo.
So the kid is not going to be told the truth.
His father is dead. That's all he needs to know. Now let him grieve properly.
But is his father really dead?
Asked Michelle. The statement drew a warning glance from Sean that she ignored.
What the hell do you mean by that? Snapped McKinney.
Michelle leaned forward and went eye to eye with him.
Well, national security claims are so often accompanied by bullshit that I was just wondering. Are you guys going back to the Daily Color updates anytime soon? What was orange for again? Imminent annihilation or perilous peril? I could never keep them straight.
Do you know how miserable I can make your life? Said McKinney, pointing a finger at her.
Pretty miserable, replied Sean, as he hooked Michelle's arm. We'll be going now, unless you have any more questions or objections. McKinney glared at Michelle.
I do not want to see you again. If I do, it will not be pleasant for you. That's a promise, and I always keep my word.
Is that it? Asked Sean. McKinney leaned forward.
This is your last warning. You're at the edge of the cliff. Don't take the next step.
A minute later, Sean and Michelle were being escorted out of the building. They were dropped off at the Panera. The black SUV roared away, leaving them staring at each other in the parking lot.
Michelle folded her arms over her chest and leaned against her Land Cruiser.
I am officially and majorly pissed off,
she exclaimed. Sean wearily rubbed his temples. Why did you think it was smart to let him know we doubt Sam Wingo is dead?
Because I was unofficially pissed off back then, and he was acting like such a smug bastard, I lost control.
You need to control your emotions better, Michelle, or we're going to get our asses handed to us. This is DHS and DOD we're facing. Together, they are the one-ton gorilla that stomps on anyone it wants to. She pushed off from the truck.
How can we leave this alone now? There is something going on, Sean. You know it, and I know it.
I'm not disputing that. The question is, how do we keep going and stay out of jail at the same time?
We haven't done anything wrong.
Do you think they need a real reason to stick us away somewhere? He as good as told us that. National security, Michelle. Like McKinney said, it trumps the Constitution. Hell, they might even send us to Gitmo. No one would ever find us.
Well, I'm not giving up.
I didn't say anything about giving up. I just meant we had to do it smart.
So what's the plan?
No, don't worry. When I think of one, you'll be the first to know. Chapter 20. Tyler Wingo sat on his bed in his room and studied the piece of paper. He'd written down the message he'd received from his father before deleting it. Not that he could ever forget it. But he'd written it down because that made it seem more real than if it was just in his head. His father's message was both straightforward and puzzling. I am sorry. Please forgive me. Sorry for what, Dad? What do you want me to forgive you for? Dying? But you can't be dead. You aren't dead. Tyler folded the paper twice and slipped it into the front pocket of his jeans. He lay back on his bed and gazed around his room. Every surface carried memories of his father, from the sports and music posters on the wall to the baseball glove and football gathering dust on a shelf.
to the framed photo of the two of them at a swim meet where his father had been a timer. Tyler snaked his hand inside his T-shirt and pulled out a pair of official dog tags his father had had made for him. He rubbed the flat metal between his fingers and wondered where his dad might be right now. Did he have his dog tags? Was he safe? Was the email sent after he was supposedly dead really from him? Or was it somehow a big mistake? He knew his father had written it because it had been in their special code. He rolled over onto his stomach and stared at the raindrops on his window. It had been a gloomy day and now a cold, overcast night, and thus a perfect match for what he was feeling. He had always thought that he would know if his dad had been injured over there. He thought he would just feel it. But then again, he thought he would be able to tell that about his mom. And he and his dad had found her on the floor of her bathroom with a bullet in her head and the gun beside her. Her suicide note had been neatly folded and on the counter next to the sink. Its contents had been terse. "I can't do this anymore. I'm sorry. I'll miss you." He shook his head to rid himself of the image of this final message from her. But it was always there, just in the back of his mind, ready to poke out when he least expected it. It could drive the smile off his face in a split second, or drown a laugh in his throat. He rose and walked over to his desk, an old-style military metal model that his father had gotten when the army had cleaned out some surplus inventory during the expansion of Fort Belvoir in Alexandria. He sat down, slid open the top drawer, and pulled the photo out. He traced the faces of his father, his mom, and him. They had been at the Army 5K that he had run with his dad. They were happy, all smiles. The sun was shining, and they were celebrating with ice cream cones after the run. Hugs, smiles, and ice cream barely 5 years ago. Then, less than a year later, everything had changed. No, everything had collapsed. His life became something else entirely. It was as though this room, this photo even, didn't belong to him. As though it were telling the history of someone else, because Tyler no longer recognized the person that used to be him. First his mom dying, and then his dad marrying a woman Tyler didn't really even know. And now his dad was gone. In a way, each of the people in that photo, his dad, his mom, and even him, was truly gone.
Tyler?
He didn't move. He just sat there, staring at the photo. Jean slipped into the room and perched on the edge of his bed.
Tyler?
She said again, but barely above a whisper. He still didn't move.
Can you at least look at me?
He finally looked at her blankly. She said,
"You didn't eat your dinner."
"Wasn't hungry."
"You swim miles at practice. How can you not be starving?"
"Just not." He turned back to the photo.
"They told me about those people."
He glanced at her sharply. "What people?"
"The man and woman who brought you home that night. I don't remember their names."
"Sean King and Michelle Maxwell."
"Right. Anyway, they won't be bothering you anymore."
"They weren't bothering me. I hired them."
"To do what, exactly?"
"You wouldn't understand."
"Try me."
"No, I'm not going to try you."
"Your father is dead, Tyler. We can't change that."
"That's right, we can't."
"So why hire those people?"
"Like I said, you wouldn't understand." She stood.
"Don't you think I miss him too?"
"I don't know, Jean. Do you?"
"How can you possibly say that? I loved him."
"If you say so."
"Why do you have to be this way to me?"
He spun around in his chair. "Because I don't really know you. It's like I'm living with a stranger."
"I've been your stepmother for nearly a year."
"Okay, but that doesn't mean I know you. We've never spoken more than a few words to each other. I wasn't invited to see you get married. I didn't even know you two were getting married. Don't you think that's weird? I'm his only kid."
"Your father wanted it that way."
Tyler rose, his face flushed.